From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on February 19th when a Rochester-based rapper named Randy Ross released a new video on YouTube. His song was called School Shooter, and it dropped just 5 days after the mass shooting in Parkland, Florida. Ross recorded parts of the video outside Grace Arcadia High School. Here are some of the lyrics. Quote, I'll show up at your lunch, eat this, four clip, let it rip, get it poppin' like a pep rally. I lay 'em down like a school shooter. I lay 'em down like a school shooter. You're dumb as F if you're thinking that I won't blow. End quote. Later in the song, Ross curses the Greece Police Department, and now Ross is being held on charges of making a terroristic threat, and he could face years in prison. He told the Democrat and Chronicle's Dave Andreotta that he was just making a music video, no serious intention to hurt anyone, and he believes his free speech rights have been violated. We invited the Greece Police Department to join us, but they declined because there is a pending prosecution, but Greece Police Chief Patrick Phelan sent us a statement saying that he is confident that Ross will be convicted of committing a terroristic threat, and he hopes Ross will be sentenced accordingly. Phelan says that after watching the video, he was very concerned for the safety of the students in the Greece School District. We also invited the district attorney's office. They declined to participate in this discussion. Let me go ahead and welcome our guests for the hour. In studio with us, and I was joking earlier with Dave Andreotta that he's sort of overexposed on this program, but I couldn't avoid it because in this case, the columnist for the Democrat and Chronicle is the one who got the in-person interview with Randy Ross in jail. It was the so-called jailhouse interview, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
How did you land that interview?
Well, inmates are entitled to a social visit within their first 72 hours of being incarcerated, and I went there on a social visit. It wasn't a planned media visit. And so the deputies actually warned me when I got there. They said, you know, he's been incarcerated for close to 48 hours now. He hasn't had a social visit. If you go in there and he sees you, you could be taking away his one social visit, which is usually reserved for family and friends. And I figured I would just take my chances. I went in, he saw me, and he told me that he's been in regular touch with his family, but that he doesn't want them to visit him because he was embarrassed that he was in jail.
So he agreed to the interview, and that's what led to Dave's story. So Dave's here to kind of characterize what he learned from the person at the center of this case and also some of what he shared with his readers in the Democrat and Chronicle. Chris Thomas is a partner with Nixon Peabody, also not connected with this case directly, but someone who has worked on plenty of free speech cases and related issues. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
And Mark Foti is here, a Rochester-based defense attorney, also not connected with this case. Mark, welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Mark, I was reading some of your colleagues, and I say colleagues, attorneys. There are a number of attorneys in the Rochester area and Western New York community who are on social media, commenting on this case on Twitter. And what I found interesting was from a lot of different backgrounds, attorneys who are conservatives, libertarians, more progressive attorneys. I didn't see anybody who doesn't work for this DA's office who supports their prosecution. Did you?
I did not. I think that's somewhat consistent with any attorney who has some interest in criminal justice as well as First Amendment rights and is familiar with the case law that sort of precedes this case and has some idea of what's appropriate in terms of prosecutions under this particular charge. I think consistently the background is that this is outside the scope of what's appropriate. And I think that most attorneys in this community who have some knowledge of that legislative and appellate history has sort of a consistent opinion on it.
Let me go ahead and once again, I'm going to read the lyrics that we can. I can't play the music for you because there's too much profanity, but I can read again some of the lyrics that the police found controversial, and then I'm going to read the full statement from the Greece police chief who sent that statement to us this morning. Again, the lyrics of the song School Shooter include the following. I'll show up at your lunch, eat this, four clip, let it rip, get it popping like a pep rally. I lay 'em down like a school shooter. I lay 'em down like a school shooter. You're dumb as F if you're thinking that I won't blow. Here is the statement that was sent to us from the Greece Police Department Chief Patrick Phelan. Quote, while I would love to discuss this matter, it would be inappropriate to have a discussion of this nature regarding a case that is a pending prosecution. I will say that I am very confident that this arrest is appropriate and that the facts of the case support the charge. The First Amendment protects speech, but it does not protect all speech. You cannot yell fire in a crowded movie house. I encourage you to read the statute, Making a Terroristic Threat, New York State Penal Law Section 490.20. The only relevant question is if the defendant's actions meet the requirements of the statute. All other matters are moot. Not only as a public official, but as the parent of a student sitting in a Greece Central School District classroom at the time that I viewed that video, I felt very concerned for the safety and well-being of the students in the district. I felt that the song lyrics were a direct, specific threat to commit an act of gun violence in a Greece school. I am 100% confident that the defendant committed the crime of making a terroristic threat, and I am hopeful that he will be convicted of the full charge and sentenced accordingly. End quote. Well, here is the full text of New York State Penal Law section, and Chris, how do we say it, 490.20?
490.20, making a terroristic threat.
I'm going to go ahead and read that, and then I'm going to get our panel's reaction here. Number one, a person is guilty of making a terroristic threat when with intent to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, influence the policy of a unit of government by intimidation or coercion, or affect the conduct of a unit of government by murder, assassination, or kidnapping. He or she threatens to commit or cause to be committed a specific offense and thereby causes a reasonable expectation or fear of the imminent commission of such offense. And part two, it shall be no defense to a prosecution pursuant to this section that the defendant did not have the intent or capability of committing the specified offense, or that the threat was not made to a person who was a subject thereof. Okay, Chris Thomas, you've worked on many cases like this. The police chief makes his case here. He sends us a statement. He's 100% confident that that's exactly what we're looking at, making a terroristic threat, and he thinks it's a specific threat to students in the Greece School District. Agree or disagree?
Disagree. I think there's overconfidence that the police chief has expressed. I'm not saying that they might not be able to make out the charge, but the thing that the court is going to be looking at is whether this communication was conveyed imminent harm, and that there was a reasonable fear of danger from an objective standard. The police chief in his statement essentially says that he wasn't looking at it as an objective person. He was talking about it from the perspective of being a father of a student in the Greece school district. What the courts do with these cases is to step back, take a deep breath, take this outside of the scope of Parkland, and ask whether or not there was actually imminent harm, a reasonable fear of danger, on an objective standard. And there have been a handful of cases that have explained this statute, and all of them speak to very specific threats, including, and for some reason, a few of them came out of the Third Department and Madison County. For some reason, Madison County is a leader in terroristic threats. And in both of those cases, there were specific threats of murder made by, in one case, an inmate against the district attorney and multiple other officials in the district attorney's office. In another case, there were multiple threats made against CPS workers threatening murder. Direct threats to identifiable people, and the appellate division upheld those as not being vague. If you'd like, I can go into some of the other cases, but we might want to talk about...
Well, yeah, and we'll get into some of those specifics about why most attorneys we've talked to don't think that this is a reasonable case to prosecute. But Chris, don't you think right now we're all a little frayed at post-Parkland? And you're hearing that fraying in the police chief's statement. He's a parent. He's not just a law officer. And I am sure there are parents in the Greece School District who have thanked him for this.
There's parents in every school district that have thanked him for this. This is, we're all horrified by what happened at Parkland. We're all horrified by what happened at Sandy Hook. But this is not that. This kid did not go into a school and pull a trigger. What did he do? He sang a rap song that wasn't particularly good, and it had some words in it that that felt dangerous. But the First Amendment exists on the cusp and sometimes over the cusp of what society is comfortable with. Lenny Bruce, back when he was pushing the First Amendment, was talking about sexual and political matters that made people extremely uncomfortable. He was prosecuted. He won. There have been the Nazis, who were protesting in Skokie, Illinois, middle of a very Jewish community. Well, you know, that made people extremely uncomfortable. The Supreme Court said it's okay. In this pluralistic society that is dependent upon free flow of thoughts and ideas, we have to be tolerant of speech that we don't like in our court. And I think even this court, the Roberts Court, has shown that it is giving fairly wide sway to expression. So were a case like this to end up in the United States Supreme Court, I doubt they would take it because I don't think it's that close a call. I think they would determine that, you know, look, This is a form of expression. Rap is a form of expression. And as Dave said in his article, you can look back on rap lyrics for time immemorial and find some pretty offensive language, language that, you know, most of us don't approve of and don't feel comfortable with, about shooting this person and that person's a hoe and all of that. But it's absolutely protected.
Okay, so Mark Foti, I assume you agree largely with what you just heard from Chris. Let me follow up by asking this, because I am not an attorney. When I see the section of the law say that a person is guilty of making a terroristic threat when with intent to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, he or she threatens to commit or cause to be committed a specified offense. Is it specified? In other words, if the song included lines like, you know, I'm going to show up at X school, pick whatever school, and I don't want to make anybody nervous or more scared than they already are, so I'm not going to get more specific, but pick an actual school and an actual classroom and then have the same kind of lyrics that he's going to empty four clips. Is that more specified? Is that just art, you know, that is protected expression? Does a prosecutor have a case here? Because this is a rapper who stood outside of a school and said, "I'm gonna roll up on your lunchroom."
Yeah, it's a good question. To sort of go back to the beginning, I do agree with Chris. I think your question sort of leads into a point that's worth following up on, which is we're discussing the objective standard of what could be inferred based on the totality of the circumstances of the music as well as the video that was posted. But the portion of the statute you just read regarding the intent of the individual, that is not an objective standard. That's actually the subjective component of the statute. So you really have both here. You have the objective standard regarding the specified offense, and then you have the subjective side of it, which is what was the intent of the individual. And that's an element of the offense. It's a separate element. So what that means is they don't just have to prove, well, you know, it's beyond a reasonable doubt that it would have been reasonable, that there would have been some level of fear that would be consistent with criminal consequence. They have to get into the mindset of the individual and be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that element, the subjective element of what was his intent. And the Greece police chief gives a statement saying, referring to his actions and sort of circumvents that component of it, doesn't talk about what his mindset is. He says, well, you know, we would all be fearful. I'm fearful as a parent. We were all afraid as a result of the comments. And he avoids that aspect of it, which is we have a right to express ourselves, whether it's done in a way that is objectively tasteful or not, if that's possible to determine. Is a separate issue. The question is, was it an intent to express himself in a way that he thought was consistent with that particular art form, or is it something where he actually intended to create some level of fear, to coerce or intimidate a civilian population? And I don't know how they can get past that element of the offense. The more interesting side to discuss is obviously the objective side, because, you know, there's all kinds of history regarding musical lyrics that detail violence towards either individuals or populations that have generally been found to be protected. And this is a question of whether this goes farther than that. That's more interesting to sort of analyze. But from a sufficiency standpoint, from a standpoint of whether it was appropriate for the Greece police to pursue these charges, especially with the district attorney's office advising them whether they should do so or not, the analysis never gets past that subjective component of it. It never gets past the mindset or the mens rea, as they refer to it in law school. It never gets past the analysis of what was his intent here, because I don't think they could ever prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population. He intended to get a popular video out there to advance his musical career. And maybe it wasn't in the best taste, but bad taste doesn't mean he had the subjective intent of intimidation. I don't think there's any evidence to support that.
All right, so there's a couple of things. And in a moment, I'm going to ask Dave Andreotta what he made of the conversation directly with Randy Ross about this. But before we get there, first of all, I want to go back to the police chief's statement. He said that this is like yelling fire in a crowded movie house, that right now you cannot talk about school. The name of the song is School Shooting. And the police chief is saying, that's like saying fire in a crowded movie house, especially right now with this climate. You can't do it. You just can't. And maybe, Mark, we're going to move any sort of even art about school shootings into an unacceptable category. But you also hear you can't yell fire in a crowded movie theater all the time. And as an attorney, do you have any thoughts about the default use of that particular, how often that gets invoked? Is that a fair thing to invoke when it comes to free speech?
I certainly don't think that it's appropriate to refer to that here as being applicable. I think that it gets brought up because there's obviously some exceptions to what is protected speech, and there's references to those comments that could potentially go outside those bounds and attempt to relate this to that. But that's not consistent with what we have here. What we have is a charge under 490 of the Criminal Procedure Law, Article 490. It was created in the weeks after September 11th to address the conduct that's consistent with terrorism. And it certainly was not created with the intent of punishing or penalizing people who make music or other statements that are intended to be an artful expression.
Okay, but Mark, you're right. This is a statute that was created after 9/11. I'm asking, especially given the police chief's statement to us, are we headed for a time where we're going to create something, codify something that puts any expression about school shootings in a different category that's no longer protected?
It's certainly possible that at some point, as this ongoing national issue continues, that the legislation within New York is going to look at something that is more specific and within the bounds of what is or outside the bounds of what's constitutionally protected. That's certainly a possibility. I couldn't say that the
legislation. But we're not there yet.
But we're certainly not there yet, and we're certainly not there with this particular statute. This is trying to fit fit a particular action that the police found offensive into a statute that's not consistent.
And would it matter in this case if the defendant had a prior record of any kind of violence?
No, that shouldn't have anything to do with it. There's no predicate aspect to the statute in
okay.
terms of identifying anything like that as having some basis in terms of charging the offense.
Okay. Chris Thomas, legally, do you think we're headed for a time where we will start to treat any expression about school shootings as we do about quote-unquote fire in a crowded theater?
No.
And should we?
Well, you can never know what Congress or the state assembly will do. They're creatures of their own. But the good thing is the judiciary oversees the legislative and the executive and calls balls and strikes on them. So to the extent that there is legislation that's introduced that would try to do that, I think the odds of that getting through either Congress or the New York State legislature would be extremely low, particularly in light of the fact that New York City is the home of probably the most freewheeling media culture in certainly in the United States, some might say the world. And there are very smart, aggressive, tough, well-funded lawyers who will point back to what? The First Amendment and what our founders said was appropriate, and say to our legislators, whether they're in Congress or in the New York State Assembly, no, no, no. The passions of the day do not dictate constitutional issues.
So this is a police chief sort of succumbing to the passions of the day?
Yes. And I would also say the town justice did as well. You know, one of the things, again, this is the checks and balances aspect that goes on even in a small in a town like Greece or Brighton or Pittsburgh or any of the other ones. You have the judiciary. That's the town judge. You have law enforcement. That's the executive branch. The executive branch brings the charges. The judiciary is supposed to take those charges, kick the tires, and say, is there enough here? I don't think that, at least from outward appearances, I certainly have no insight into what actually happened in terms of research or anything like that done by the town justice, you know, and or her staff. But the setting of $50,000 bail on this, on this individual, and on this music strikes me as pointing to the fact that the judiciary wasn't serving as a check on the executive in this case. I pulled, before I came out here, what's called the jail census, and any of your listeners can go onto Google and type in Monroe County, New York jail census. Click on the link, it brings it up, and then you can scroll through and see the names and charges and bail amounts for all of the individuals being held in the Monroe County Jail right now. If you roll down to Randy Ross, you see that he's being held since the 26th of February. His bail is $50,000 cash, $100,000 bond. And if you go two people down, there's a fellow listed there, Tyshawn Rumpf, and hit the allegation that he's being held on, at least according to the census, is intentional murder. And guess what his bail is? $50,000 and a $100,000 bond. So to me, the checks and balances that are supposed to happen in all of our courts might not have occurred here. I could be wrong, but it seems to me that I'm not.
By the way, what's he facing? Maximum sentence in this case?
On a D?
I think it's 8.
could go to prison for 8 years. Okay, so Dave Andriotta.
I reported 7, but you can't believe everything you read in the newspaper.
No. Actually, you're right. It's a
well, thank you.
It's 2 to 7 determinant sentence, and then there would be a period of parole after that.
Okay, before I get to your phone calls, John in Rochester, hang on, Dave Andriotta. When you met Randy Ross in jail, what was your mission that day in terms of understanding about him? What did you want to know?
I wanted to know what his intent was. I wanted to know specifically what he meant by, I'll lay him down as a school shooter. And I quoted him as saying in my article, one thing that I was actually struck by initially was when I asked him specifically, what did you mean by, I'll lay him down like a school shooter? And his answer was, it's a simile, you know, it's a comparison using the words like or as. And that's something that I didn't expect to come out of his mouth. Number one, if you are judging him, I guess as I did, I had a preconceived notion based on never having met him and only on seeing his video. I mean, I'm seeing a young man angry at the world. I wrote, you know, sort of thug-like in his appearance and manner. He was angry. He was belligerent. He's using profanity. I didn't expect a grammar lesson when I got there.
And let me just interrupt you there. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the four of us sitting around this table are white. The chief police, white. The judge is white. Everybody views this through the lens through which they've grown up.
Absolutely.
And this is why I think diversification of the courts is so critical, because I think if we were to have some guests on here who African-Americans or people who understood the rap genre better than the lily white folks who are sitting around this table or who were adjudicating this matter, there'd be an understanding of what you just said, Dave, that he reported. And so, you know, as with most things in the United States surrounding law enforcement and criminal law, there is a heavy undercurrent of race. And I think that plays itself out here in this case and even here around this table.
Sure. And I acknowledge, again, from my only exposure to him being the video, to having preconceived notions of the person that I would sit across from. Mm-hmm. And so in answer to the question, though, after we got through the grammar lesson, his answer at first wasn't all that articulate. And I was limited in what I could quote sort of in the article, you know, for space reasons and that sort of, and readability and that sort of things. But he said, look, laying down like a school shooter can be anything. You can lay anything down. I'm laying down my music. But we went on to talk about the intent of the song. And basically what he described for me was that, you know, this is a persona that he's taking on, and that there are forces in the world that are holding him down, and he won't be held down. He has to make money, he has a family to support, and anyone who stops him from doing that, from moving forward, he's going to take care of. He's going to lay down like a school shooter, the implication, of course, being the awful image when you shoot someone, they fall, and they're out of your way, the obstacle's gone. And, you know, do I think that's an analogy in bad taste? Absolutely. I'm not qualified to judge rap music. I don't listen to enough of it. But it's my understanding that, based on social media feedback, that his music isn't all that popular. But that doesn't change the fact that I don't think it's a terroristic threat. And apparently the two attorneys on the panel here and attorneys in our community don't feel that way either. In terms of his intent with the naming of the song was written 6 months ago, long before Parkland. And he got the idea from a friend of his who was flirting with the idea of using the identity or the handle, if you will, of school shooter in playing a Call of Duty video game. You can go by any name in these video games. And this guy was flirting with the idea of using school shooter. They both agreed it was a bad idea. But for some reason, Randy thought that it might be a good idea to use in a song. So he writes the song. He records it. After Parkland, he figures that he wants to capitalize on this national conversation about school shootings and release a video. He pays a friend $80 to follow him around. They use locations at a couple of convenience stores, a gas station, and like you said, Greece Arcadia School. That was the one that was most prominent. That's his alma mater, by the way. He graduated from there. And I believe there might have been another Greece school too. And they shoot this video over the weekend. He drops it on Monday, February 19th. And I'm not sure that it had the intended effect because the day he was arrested, which was a whole week later on February 26th, that video had precisely 100 views on YouTube. I suspect 40 of them came from him and his friends. And today, because of this case getting so much attention, it has around 27,000 views. So it, you know, there might have been some sort of ancillary benefit to him in terms of getting some attention to his music, but certainly not at the time that he dropped the video. It just didn't resonate.
So, before I get to the phones, Chris Thomas.
Yeah, one last thing. So I just wanted to tell the viewers or the listeners about there's two cases that deal with schools. And one of them was in 2015 in Clinton County. And a school student told her friends that she was going to bring a gun to school and, quote unquote, shoot up the high school and to shoot the principal. And the Clinton County court said that there was no evidence that the statements were made with the intent to intimidate the civilian population, and so dismissed it. There was another one where, this was down in Kings County, where a janitor told a teacher that that teacher better be absent the day that they fired the janitor because I'm going to come in here and Columbine this poop. And then was miming a shooting gesture and making gun noises. That got reported, and that got dismissed. That just happened in 2017, and that was the appellate division in the second department simply saying that it was insufficiently specific. And this is one where the janitor was saying, when I get fired, I'm coming in, I'm going to Columbine this beep.
Mm. Evan, if I can just follow up briefly, I have those two cases, among other cases that Chris has referred to. Matter of Brittany A was one of them, People versus Adams. I think it's worth noting that, you know, looking into this briefly, we both were able to pull these cases. We were able to make consistent findings as to what the history of the case law is on this. The Greece police from my understanding, consulted with the district attorney's office. This information isn't somehow exclusive to us. This is available really to the public, but in particular, anybody with legal training knows how to quickly isolate and identify these cases as part of their research. So this information was available to them. I that's why I think a number of attorneys have as strong feelings as they do, because they know that there's this line of cases out there, and it's somewhat confusing as to how those responsible with legally advising the decision makers here weren't able to say, this is really not the right decision to go forward with charges and to make an issue of this in the way that you're contemplating doing so.
Yeah, one more point on that. Google Scholar. You just go to Google Scholar, you type in that you want to use the New York law base that they've got. They're all right there. Easily searchable.
All right, John in Rochester, first on the phone. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. I got to say that I applaud the police chief for bringing these charges. If nothing else, I think it's a good lesson to this kid. The major point here is, how do we know the kid, and how do the police know this kid doesn't have access to weapons? You guys, I'll tell you, in my mind, you can't see the forest through the trees, because clearly it's an intimidation and fear thing that he's perpetrating out there. And I just think that's pretty clear. I just think you're too locked up and you can't see the forest through the trees.
John, thank you for the phone call. First of all, 2 points there, and I'm going to kick it back to our panel here. Number one, he says, how do we know he didn't have access to a weapon? I don't even think that matters based on law. Because the second part of the section we're talking about says, it shall be no defense to a prosecution pursuant to this section that the defendant did not have the intent or capability of committing the specified offense. So in other words, even if he didn't have a gun, it doesn't matter, John.
Exactly.
It's a question of whether he was making a specific threat. And to John's point, I've heard from parents who tell me, I was intimidated. My kids would be intimidated looking at that. Intimidation is part of that section of law. Tell me how that's not intimidating. Mark Foti.
Well, I think that it goes back to something that was discussed briefly earlier that I mentioned, that you have to look at the subjective intent of the individual. This was not a letter that was sent. It was not a Facebook or social media post directed at individuals at the school. It was a music video that clearly some time had been spent on in order to post on YouTube in order to obtain viewership. It's consistent with a long line of musical history that pushes the envelope, whether you're talking about Eminem, who was quoted by Chief Roberts in a Supreme Court case a few years ago in discussion of a similar issue involving intent of a threat that was posted in the form of lyrics, whether it's the very popular Pumped Up Kicks by Foster the People, which has the lyrics of you better run, 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 outrun my bullets. This is something that nobody seems to have so much concern with. Much of this music has been awarded or recognized with Grammys or other types of awards, and this is something consistent with trying to obtain that objective. Yes, I'm sure that Mr. Ross knew it was arguably in bad taste. And I think he knew that there'd be a controversy based on discussion over whether it passed the bounds of what is appropriate or in good taste. But that intent is not consistent with intent to intimidate or to threaten. That would be more appropriately carried out by a direct threat with some sort of communication that is sent.
Dave Andreotti, you said he was trying to capitalize on the moment. Right.
Right. And he also told me that when the police showed up at his place of work, he works at a auto dealership detailing cars. They showed up a week later after the video dropped, and they asked him why he thought they were there. And he said that he had no idea. Eventually, they, talked about the video, of course. And he told them, he said, look, or he told me, look, I understand why they came to question me. I mean, I'm talking about a school shooter. We're having this national conversation. There is this concern out there. Feelings are raw. Everyone's on edge. But once you can't get past the specific threat, of which I would still argue that there was none, he didn't understand why he was arrested.
And by the way, Mark Foti referenced Pumped Up Kicks, Foster the People is the group, 2011 song with the lyrics, "You better run faster than my bullet." Trish on Twitter points out, well, that's a white group, and she feels like there's a tinge of race to this. Do you?
I certainly think that's part of it. I think one of the bigger issues is I think there's a number of factors that have resulted in this being pursued in a different direction. I think we haven't discussed the fact there was some brief mention to it, but that Mr. Ross had a specific expletive directed at the Greece Police Department.
F the police. F the Greece police.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Evan, if I could jump in there, I would also point out that song Pumped Up Kicks, which was talked about quite a bit at the time when that song came out. That song it's not a rap song. It's sort of a catchy little perky little tune. And it is recounting the story of a boy named Robert who is intent on massacring his high school. So it's told within the context of a story about a boy named Robert. But you know, there are other far more egregious examples, a couple of which I quoted in egregious examples of actual threats, or one could argue are actual threats. You know, and these go back years and years and sort of set the stage for what we call now gangsta rap, or I guess that's morphed into hip hop. I'm not a music critic, but 1988, NWA was using the lyrics of, quote, a young N-word on the warpath, and when I'm finished, it's going to be a bloodbath of cops dying in L.A. Ice-T, 1992, I'm about to bust some shots off. I'm about to dust some cops off. Those are very specific, far more specific than anything that Randy Ross said. And, you know, I didn't see them getting arrested for that. They got in other trouble, but not for that.
Can I just jump in? Because I think what John said really touches on the nub of this issue, and I think it was a really good call. He says he applauds the chief of police for the arrest, and then he went on to say that it's a good lesson for this man to learn. That's extremely troubling, because if this is in fact a violation of constitutional rights, we as a community, as a nation, do not go about violating constitutional rights in order to teach lessons. And I just ask people what's the next step? Somebody is preaching the gospel at the corner of State and Main. Somebody doesn't like it. Well, let's teach him a lesson and arrest him. There goes freedom of religion. Or if there's a person who's a legal possessor of a firearm, a perfectly legal weapon, but, you know, the police don't like the fact that he's got it. Well, why don't we just teach him a lesson and take it away? John, I appreciate your call, but we don't teach lessons by taking away constitutional rights.
Let's get our only break. We're going to come back to your phone calls and more of your comments about this issue. We're not going to link to the video, but it's easy to find. Randy Ross's video is called School Shooter on YouTube. Dave Andreotta is right. Had just a few dozen views when he was arrested, and now well over 26,000 at last count this morning. And we're talking about whether it's protected speech or whether the police and the DA's office, whom we invited, by the way, and they both declined. The police sent a statement to us saying that they think this is a terroristic threat and a worthwhile prosecution. You're hearing others who think otherwise. We'll get back to your phone calls next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the Next Connections, when the media reports on international affairs, do you think you're getting a full picture? Well, our guest, who is a guest of the Rochester Committee on Latin America, thinks the media is getting Latin America wrong often, and we will talk about how and how we can better understand it. In our second hour, after the Oscars, is The Shape of Water going to bring sci-fi back to the mainstream? And what about Get Out? Should it have won? We'll talk about it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Jay, call back. Jay was going to talk to us a little bit about the context of the rap genre here from the music video, but we lost his call. Jay, call back if you could. This is Joe in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, hi, Evan. Thank you for having me. Question. Why the prosecutors don't take our local lawmaker who support the gun lobby, who put machine guns, killing machine, to the community, and just send a little guy who just talk try to put him in jail. Why?
Yeah, Joe, thanks for the phone call. And that is a separate issue. Joe is saying, you know, why aren't we prosecuting the support of the gun lobby that is putting deadly weapons in the hands of people across this country? I understand the sentiment. That is a separate discussion, and we will continue to have that discussion because you might know there are a couple of big events planned for this month post-Parkland. Those remarkable students have organized a couple of events. March 14th, I believe, is a national school walkout planned. March 24th is a march about gun violence. We'll have conversations about both of those and a lot more opportunity to discuss that. So, Joe, thank you for the phone call. It's 844-295-TALK. If you want to tell us what you think about this video, the content of the video, and the actions of police in the prosecutor's office, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. The former community relations director for the Monroe County District Attorney's Office is Mary Wilmot. She is not with them anymore, but she tweeted in response to when Dave's story came out, and here's what Mary wrote. She said, "How could law enforcement differentiate on threats? This not bad taste, offensive, and frightening. This is not bad taste, offensive, and frightening if you have a child in school. No excuses." In other words, she's saying, whether it's bad taste, whether it's offensive, this is offensive, it's frightening. You've got kids in school. Parents can feel how frightening this is. And sorry, Dave, no excuses. This guy should go to jail. Mary Wilmot defending the police and the DA's office there.
I find her comments offensive and frightening. I mean, she's simply going on a gut check. She's reacting. It's a knee-jerk reaction from the gut, and she's not citing specific threats. And that, to me, is really scary. Now, I understand that she wasn't a prosecutor in the DA's office, that she was the communications director, and that she's no longer there. But if that's the kind of threshold standard that the DA's office is applying to these cases, I would find that frightening.
They did decline, and Mary is only speaking for herself in that tweet.
Correct.
Not the DA's office in this case. And we invited the DA's office to come on. They said thanks, but no thanks in this case. They're working on the case. Mark Foti, what do you make of Mary's comment there?
Well, I think that it is troubling from the perspective that it focuses in on one aspect of this issue and ignores that component of why was this put out there. It fails to analyze this on both a constitutional perspective and the perspective of what was the young man's mindset. I think it's worth noting that I had mentioned it earlier, but there was a case argued in 2014 at the United States Supreme Court, and it was a case that involved Facebook posts that were postings involving lyrics that appeared to have sort of the nature of a rap. And the lyrics were threatening in nature, directed at a number of individuals. And this was coming from an individual who had been fired from his job because he had been threatening people at work and had an order of protection against him favoring his ex-wife, I believe it was. And those individuals were extremely concerned about those lyrics that he was posting. And ultimately, he ends up convicted. It leads to a significant amount of appellate analysis that ultimately goes up to the United States Supreme Court, where that's where Chief Roberts was quoting Eminem, and there was a significant amount of discussion among the panel. Ultimately, it leads to a decision in 2015 where they found that there wasn't the right mens rea for it, that even in that case, which should be so much more concerning than this case given the circumstances that were surrounding the posts, there wasn't enough there for him to have been convicted of the offense. It ended up being thrown out and by an almost unanimous decision with the United States Supreme Court.
In comparing cases, I want to get back to our calls because our next listener is sort of comparing Parkland and a case like this. Bob in Fairport next. Go ahead, Bob.
Yes, Evan, this is interesting because as I'm listening to this, I think about the ethical issues going on here. If you look at the Florida shooting, here you have a young man. He made public threatening statements. He spoke to counselors. FBI was warned through a grandparent. So, of course, the shooting happened. We look back, and now we're accusing the FBI. We're threatening the counselor and other organizations with legal action because they didn't you know, they didn't, they held us. So on one side of the coin, you're saying somebody could make the speech, yet you're holding people like the police and FBI and other organizations, you know, as a threat to say, I'm sorry, you can't touch it. And at the same time, if you don't touch it, we'll go after you.
This is Chris Thomas. This is Chris Thomas.
Some ethical issue.
Okay, so hold on, Bob. Go ahead, Chris.
This is Chris Thomas. That's not at all what we're saying. Law enforcement has a truly wide array of options available to it. I am personally familiar with a situation where there was an allegation of a youngster with a kill list at a local school. And the police did what I believe the police should have done here, and I don't know, maybe they did, but they went out to the house. They went out to the house immediately. They interviewed the child. They interviewed the parents. They even searched the house, and they took possession of some of the firearms that were in the house. So I'm not at all saying that there's no obligation for law enforcement to do something. Check it out. Take a look. What they would have, I think, at least from what Dave wrote in his article, they would have found that there's this guy. He had a prior conviction for some sort of a larceny. He had some tattoos. He had a 5-month-old, and he's living over in Greece with his parents. That is what I think some other local police departments would have done. The one that I'm personally familiar with, that is what they did. And I almost get the impression that there was a little bit of there's no question that there was post-Parkland reactiveness to it. And, you know, I don't hold that against the police for doing that, but that's not to say that the speech wasn't protected.
This is David Andrietto at the Democrat and Chronicle. And, Bob, I don't think that even Randy Ross himself would say that. You know, he said to me that he understood why the police wanted to speak with him. What he couldn't understand was the ultimate arrest. I had 30 minutes with Randy last Wednesday, and I did not specifically ask him whether he knew of the police searching his home. What he told me of how the arrest went down is they came to his place of work that morning, interviewed him, left. He thought that was the end of it. And then they came back during a lunch break and arrested him. So I to Chris's point, I don't know that the police didn't search his house. I don't know the specifics of that. I didn't ask Randy. It's something I neglected to ask. But again, even Randy Ross, I think, would say that he understands why the police would want to question him.
A flood of response, and I've got to try to get through as much as we can. Gary says, watch the video, and as a former white police officer and a constitutional rights advocate, I saw nothing criminal in the video. It certainly brings the question of implicit racial bias up. Just go to YouTube and watch white supremacist stuff, which is worse. This is art. Much of art is supposed to disturb us. Ask anyone who listens to Bob Dylan. Now, let me grab Tom in Canandaigua, who is, I think, a former teacher at Greece Arcadia. Is that right, Tom?
That's correct.
Go ahead.
A former English teacher as well. And I understand the legalities here, but I also think that as a people, we need to be careful of our word choices. The word choices to me, especially as a former teacher at Arcadia, would concern me if I had to go to work there today. There needs to be some kind of balance between the tension of a young man in Florida who has all kinds of threats against the school district, and then when nothing's done, goes in and shoots that school district up. How do you discern between somebody who's simply using this as art and someone who is serious? And that's something I think we need to address.
Tom, thank you for the phone call. Mark Foti, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's a real concern. I don't think that anything can be gained from simply brushing that aside, that if something is brought up that causes concern among a particular set of individuals or a community, that there needs to be some follow-up. And I think the discussion here this afternoon has addressed that to some extent, that everybody agrees that it was appropriate for the police to
check in.
Yeah, to check in, to have that initial interview. I don't know if it had to happen at his workplace, but setting that aside for a moment, it was appropriate to question him on what was your purpose behind this. When nothing turned up to suggest that there was any real legitimacy of the threat, pursuing criminal charges at that point is where I think we start having concerns raised that it went too far.
Okay, Chris Thomas.
I think Tom raises a great point. We've had a couple of just dynamite calls so far. The thing I'd point to as well is that the state legislature, in drafting this section, actually built in what's called a liability protection. And to Tom's point, the legislature encourages people to make reports. It's sort of the if you see something, say something. And if you are the person who makes that sort of a qualified disclosure of suspicious behavior, you're going to be immune from any civil or criminal liability for reporting it. So, you know, to Tom's point, there's no question that there's a safety issue that gets raised. There's no question that law enforcement has a right to, you know, investigate and check it out. There's no question that if there was a private individual who reported this to the police, that that person would be completely protected from any liability. It's the criminal charge for the art that's the problem.
Chris, do you think he's going to be convicted?
No.
Mark?
No.
Dave, you're not a legal analyst, but...
I would say no, not on that charge, but it wouldn't surprise me if he got ticketed for a violation of trespassing or something like that.
Okay. Well, I appreciate our panelists here. I want to remind our listeners, we'll post the full statement attached to this podcast from Greece Police Chief Patrick Phelan, and we'll continue to open that invitation. Once the case is over, perhaps we can sit down with the chief who was kind enough to send that statement. Thank you, Chief, for that. I understand it's a pending case and a little sensitive. The DA's office as well, the door's open to them. Thanks for all the great feedback this hour. Couldn't even get through all the calls and emails, but our thanks to our guests in studio, Chris Thomas and Mark Foti, attorneys. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Dave Andreotta, who sat down with Randy Ross in jail for the Democrat and Chronicle. Thank you, Dave. Rob Braden, Megan Mack behind the glass. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow.